Welcome to Real Talk JavaScript, the weekly talk show that brings you stories of real-world development from industry experts and developers like you and me. Each week, Ward Bell, Dan Wallin, Craig Shoemaker, and John Papa find out what it takes to write, deploy, and maintain apps that stand up to the demands of the real world. And now, here are your hosts.
Welcome back to Real Talk JavaScript. This is episode 108, and today's topic is about helping developers learn to code and kind of how people get started into coding, or maybe experienced developers shifting to a different part of the code universe, because all developers are not in the same exact field. Isn't that shocking, Dan?
It's very shocking. Yeah. We should just learn like one thing that everybody uses. You remember the days of like VB, what, 3 or something like that?
Visual Basic, 4 or 3.
One thing. And if you were good at that one thing, it was easy to get a job. And now it's just like, you have to be good at, I don't know how many things. It's crazy.
Remember the days when the language choices were simply just, do I do Java or .NET? You know, like it was either C# or Java, basically, 20 years ago. And now it's like, which of the 10 languages? And then within those languages, which web framework or platform or back-end framework or cloud tools should I use? And it almost feels like you need a toolbox that's as big as a house to actually
get into this,
isn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to build one in the backyard for all my technologies I have to learn, you know?
Well, I'd be feeling pretty depressed if we didn't have an expert in this area to kind of clarify for us today. So we want to welcome today onto the show our guest. It's Madison Canna. How you doing, Madison?
I'm doing good. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Oh, thanks for coming. And you have a pretty interesting topic today and a pretty interesting perspective on how people can kind of get into development, and you've got your own unique story on that. And we just thought this was great as we talked offline as a new developer or an existing developer trying to learn new areas that your story might be really appealing to folks. So do you want to kind of share what your strategy has been?
My story kind of started just a few years ago. I dropped out of college because I felt like I wasn't learning real world skills and I didn't know what I wanted to do yet. And then I spent a few years just figuring out what I might like to do. And then my sister worked as a developer. So I tried coding, and I still remember the first coding course I took, and I loved it. And I decided to become a developer. So I kind of figured out, you know, how do you teach yourself to code online? And then I eventually became a developer. And yeah, today I'm really passionate about helping other people who kind of want to make the same transition.
Wow, there's so much to pick at there. So you went to college for, I assume, a different major or degree?
Yeah, I majored in English briefly before I realized, you know, like, I'm not sure why I'm here. And it doesn't make sense to spend a bunch of money on something when you're just not sure, you know, when you're 20 years old. It didn't make sense to me. And I also felt like, I just wasn't really learning valuable skills that could get me a job. So I kind of figured leaving and figuring out an alternative kind of path would be better for me.
You know, it's interesting. I think there's always these discussions on social media, and we're all on Twitter, as I'm sure many of our listeners are as well. And there's always these conversations, seems to pop up every other week of, is college important to becoming a developer or somebody in the technology field? Maybe not even a developer, just a... I'm trying not to say developer always, because there's also people who do DevOps or IT support or administration or database. And I don't know. How do you all feel about the whole, you know, do you need a college degree? Is it okay to go a different path?
I think it's a good point. Let's just say that what I did in college and what I've been doing the last 20 plus years has nothing to do with each other. So I will say I think it was a good experience. But you know,
what did you do in college, Dan?
Well, my official degree my original plan was to go to medical school, and so economics was the shortest way to do that. You know, as the stars would align, I did not take a single CS course in college. It was all self-taught, as you've done, Madison, as well. So I can totally sympathize with that.
Okay, very cool.
Yeah, so many people seem to have that I've interacted with, and I've been in this industry for 25 years. Oh my gosh. So many people I've interacted with have gone down different paths. And I find it these days that it's more rare for me to know somebody who's actually going to college for computers than somebody who didn't, or maybe didn't even go to college at all and got into this field. So I think that's what's fascinating about this is as computers become more of a daily thing that people need to know about, for almost any job, I wonder if it's not going to become as specialized in the future and it's just going to become more part of like what everybody does. I don't know. I'm getting kind of deep here, but so when you started going down this road, what did you do to get into this, Madison?
What did I do? So I pretty much figured out like what field I wanted to go into, right? Like you said, JavaScript isn't just the whole world. There's so many different fields within tech. So I kind of figured out what I was most interested in, and I figured out what language I wanted to learn, which became JavaScript, and what foundational skills I needed. And then, you know, I built up a portfolio and started kind of immersing myself in the world of JavaScript. And then eventually like got my first job.
Wow. And so JavaScript, was that the first real language that you, programming language that you got into then?
Yeah, it was. And it kind of still is. I never really, like, I've kind of dabbled in Python recently, but it was definitely my first one. And I think I ended up choosing it, not necessarily because of the language itself, but because I felt like the community around it was so welcoming and there was so many beginner-friendly resources and things like that, and then kind of went from there.
You know, I think there's something to be said about that community and then the beginner-friendly resources, because I think I would argue Python has that as well. Mm-hmm. JavaScript definitely has that. But then, you know, I won't name them, but several languages I've done in the past that they definitely don't have that, where, you know, the bar to entry is like, you know, you got to be a high jumper to get into that language, because it's just, you know, maybe it wasn't as well adopted or whatever the case may be. So that's great. What were, was there any key resources you jumped into initially to get started?
I loved Free Code Camp. That was definitely helpful. And then, you know, platforms like Frontend Masters and Egghead were also like huge in my learning too. And then, yeah, definitely like the community. Like I said, I remember I was just starting out and I went to a meetup and there was a Frontend Happy Hour panel there, and they're another Frontend podcast. And I met Brian Holt and Jem Young, and they were talking to me and saying, oh, apply to Netflix sometime if you want to, and being so encouraging and talking about my career goals and everything. And I just felt so welcomed and so excited by everyone in the community. So it definitely helps to keep you learning when you feel like all your friends are learning about it too.
I think that's the piece that a lot of people talk about a lot is the community. And there's good parts and bad parts about any community, of course. But learning JavaScript, sometimes I feel like when I need to go learn a new feature JavaScript, it's like I'll see something on, let's say, Twitter. Somebody's talking about some new feature called the widget. And I'm like, what is that thing? People are talking about it. Then where do you go to learn about it? That's something I get stuck on sometimes. And I wonder, when you see new topics, Madison, where do you go to figure out what the heck is that thing?
I feel like I used to go to videos and tutorials, but I feel like I used to take so many that it became a form of procrastination. Like, instead of going and building something with this thing, I'm going to watch like a 4-hour video course on it. And I absolutely think like the videos and tutorials that are out there are so important and helpful to me. But what I do today is I like go look at the documentation and then try to have that painful feeling of trying to build as quickly as possible with that thing. And that has really helped me a lot.
I like that. So you basically put your hands on the keyboard and just dive right in and see, what does this thing do? And I find personally that's the best way for me to learn as well. I think I have attention deficit disorder. I get distracted very, very easily, as Dan will attest to. And it makes it hard for me to sit down, and even just the idea of watching a 4-hour video makes me just sigh inside. And this is from a person who's made 4-hour videos. So
it's going to say.
I just can't. I can't anymore. And I'm on this kick now. Everything I should do should be as short as possible, whether it's something I write or I create a video for or a learning tutorial of any kind. I feel like everyone's time has gotten so divided. There's so much to learn that the faster you can get to it, the better. But I also realize I'm not the only learning style out there. there's people who do like to read and people who do like to watch videos and people who like to jump in hands-on. And I haven't actually used Free Code Camp. Can you explain to us a little bit about what Free Code Camp does for you as a new learner?
Yeah, so they have...
And let's take a quick break from a word from our sponsors.
Raygun helps thousands of customer-centric software teams detect, diagnose, and resolve performance issues faster and more efficiently. And right now, just for a limited time, if you switch your application monitoring to Raygun, you'll receive up to $20,000 in free usage credit. There's never been a better time to switch. Save thousands and empower your team with the visibility and insights that they need to deliver a flawless customer experience. So go over to raygun.com/switch to apply today for that $20,000 in free credit. That's raygun.com/switch.
And now we're back.
Free Code Camp has a curriculum, a couple of different curriculums on their site, but the one that I did takes you from being a beginner to front-end development to going into different topics. So JavaScript, React, and then they have interview prep sections. So it's kind of an entire curriculum taking you from A to B.
But that's good to hear, actually, Madison, because I think one of the challenges that I know I've run into with just name a technology is if you don't have that way to lay down the foundation, it's really hard to move to the next level because, you know, you don't have that foundation to build upon. And so now you dive into something that you're just lost. And it sounds like what you've done with Free Code Camp has really kind of set that foundation and then kind of builds on top of that.
So can you share a little bit about your code book club? I put a couple of links into the show notes for people to go check it out, but can you explain like what that is and kind of how you got started in it and why might people might want to become a host, because I see here you've got a link to becoming a host too.
Definitely. The Codebook Club is a developer community I created back in January of this year. And we have book clubs and we work through coding courses together and we do live video calls where we complete common interview questions together. And I created it because I kept seeing this problem, which is like whether you are, you know, just getting started learning how to code or if you've been working as a developer for 10 years, it can be difficult to get the accountability and support that you need when you're learning a new skill. And if you think about it, you learned to code at a boot camp because you paid for it and you got your skin in the game and you have peers and you learn on the job because you have to or you'll get fired. And so if you want to learn something new, you have to keep yourself accountable to learning. And that's kind of the goal of the Codebook Club. And so I host meetings and now we have a few other hosts. And we're getting more hosts each day. And to be a host is to really have a learning goal and then commit to learning it and hosting meetings with other people who also have that goal.
And how does this work? Like if one of us wanted to join the book club and kind of just get our feet wet in it, what would you recommend?
Oh, yeah. So we have a sign-up link where you can join and then you get into the Discord. And then I would recommend just reading our welcome channel, which kind of briefly goes over everything that's going on. And then I would just say pick what you're interested in, right? So we have a couple of book clubs and we have a coding course that some people are going through right now. And then if you're interested in one of those, then you can become a member and start participating. And then if you have a learning goal that you don't see in our club so far, then you can sign up to become a host and you work with me to figure out, we find other people who maybe like want to take the same tutorial as you, or maybe you want to, you know, build your first app in React or Angular. And then we figure out how to like set that up and get you going.
Nice. Now I noticed you also have, this is like super intriguing. You have Code Wars because I see every other Sunday, is it? There's a Code Wars group coding session. What's that all about?
Yes. So that is when a group of us, it's usually like 18 or 19 people, hop on a Zoom call and we have one person be the driver. So they share their screen and then we do group coding. So we complete a challenge. We try to do challenges that you might be faced with in an interview. And this has been really valuable for me because so sometimes when I'm the one coding, I have to say, I used to be really nervous about live coding in front of other people. But now I can just do it all the time because I got so used to it. And then other people will also be the ones, you know, coding out the solution. And I think it's really valuable for people who just started learning how to code. I've gotten the feedback that it's so valuable just to see other developers. Like maybe we get stuck on a problem or maybe, you know, we're not sure, we have to Google it and kind of talk through the solutions. That's really valuable. And then others like me, I've been a developer for a few years. It's just so helpful to like work through these problems with others and keep yourself accountable to learning.
Well, and it's funny because, I mean, John and I have done that many times over the years, and our buddy Ward and Craig, they're on the podcast sometimes as well. And it's amazing how your perspective can change when, like, I see something you did and I'm like, oh my gosh, I never thought of doing it that way. You know, I've been using a four each and there's this new four of, for example. I mean, that's a simple example. I really like, so are people that are on this, have you had any folks that are actually going through the interview process, or is that still, haven't had someone like that quite yet?
Yeah, we have. I've talked to three or four people who've been on the call saying, you know, I'm interview prepping right now, or like I lost my job due to COVID and I'm trying to focus more on these problems. So we do have some of those people, and then others who are completely new. And then we also have some folks who've been developers for like 15 years. And I just learned from everyone on the call, which is really incredible.
So you've got this Code Book Club right now. And the current topic is, it seems to be, You Don't Know JS, which is a book, I believe, right? By Kyle Simpson, is that correct?
Yeah, so it's actually a book series. And I think there's about five of them. We started the book club in January. And we've read two of them so far, and now we're onto the third book. So it's like a year-long book club. And I always wanted to read the series, but I knew that I needed to find a way to hold myself accountable. And I talked to a lot of other people who kind of felt the same way. And so, you know, when you host a book club, you kind of have to read the book, right? You have to show up to the calls, which was really helpful.
You know, I've seen some TV shows or commercials and things where people have book clubs and the people don't read them. And it's like they get ostracized and kicked out if they don't read the book. And I think I saw one where they literally threw the person out the window during a commercial, to be very clear, not real life. So I always looked at this and I'm like, geez, is this how book clubs really are? Is it like brutal if somebody doesn't read it? I mean, do they have to wear a dunce cap for the day, or how does it work if somebody doesn't actually read the stuff?
Yes, we publicly shame them. Totally kidding. We're pretty relaxed about that, right? Like if you have to miss a meeting, of course, that's fine. Like whatever works for your schedule. I do tend to notice that when someone kind of comes on the video call and shows their face and kind of commits to coming on, we do seem to have a good like retention rate, I think, that people do keep coming back. So I think that helps.
Yeah, and I was obviously kidding as well. I just hope it's obvious to our listeners out there. Please don't throw anybody out the window, Madison.
I'm tried that with me once. Yeah,
especially since Dan is like twice the height and size of me, so didn't go very far.
So when you go through these, Madison, what type of things are you doing? Like, obviously, I guess everybody has the book. Are you walking through some code samples, for example, and then discussing those, or what's the process?
Yeah, we almost always try to figure out a code sample. And there are some practice problems within the book that we grab because we do feel like you just read something, but you also need to figure out how to apply it too. And then also another component of the calls is we just come on the call and, you know, sometimes someone will say, this was my understanding of what he said of this concept, proto JavaScript, like, was this your understanding too, right? Because sometimes you're reading something or you're learning something and you think that you understood it, but you don't really know. And so just talking to other people or getting yourself unstuck is something else that we do.
Kind of validating your knowledge, it sounds like. Because I'll tell you, it's amazing. Literally last night, my son was up here. I had a problem with a totally different thing, a Docker container I was trying to build. And he wants nothing to do with computers, but he was sitting here right here where my hand is. Nobody else can see it, but you can. And I told him, don't go away, because I was talking through the problem. And it's amazing how when you do that with someone, even though he could care less, like solutions instantly almost like appear, you know, and because you're sharing that knowledge with someone else and then they get feedback. And it sounds like in the book club, that same type of process would happen.
Definitely. Yeah. And there's so much asynchronous learning when it comes to learning to code, or if you've been a developer for a while, right? Like you're reading a tutorial that someone wrote a month ago, or you're watching a course that someone made a few weeks ago, or you're reading a comment from someone else. But I felt like what was missing for me and others is like that actual live component when you're learning something in real time with others and getting feedback on that.
Well, switching gears just a quick bit here. I noticed that you work at Keeper Security. And I wasn't familiar with this company. That's a leading cybersecurity platform for preventing password-related data breaches and cyber threats. That sounds pretty serious. Like, what's it like working at a cybersecurity company?
I love it. Yeah, we have different security-related products, and I work on one of the front-end teams. We use React, and yeah, I love my coworkers. Security is such a fascinating field, so it's pretty much my dream job.
So they have I'm familiar with LastPass and 1Password. So Keeper must be similar to one of those, I assume. Am I making the right connection that they store passwords?
Yes, password management. Yes.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and every little public service announcement. Everybody out there, if you're not using a password manager, you really should consider this. It's even something I've gotten my children, who are in the high school and college age now, to start using, as opposed to, hey, Dad, my password is always, you know, ABC123 for everything.
123, yeah.
Or something. I got good news on that front. I literally last week, Haiti, who's my wife, John knows her, she is now on one of these, John. It has taken me like 2 years of pushing, because she just remembers things. Me, I'm not that smart and I can't remember, so I have to look it up. But she can remember these nasty passwords, you know? And I'm like, yeah, but you got to have two-factor and all that other stuff. So I'm happy to report that my whole family now is on a password manager.
Yeah, it took
switch
me
to
longer.
Ours. No, just kidding.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. I like looking at these because you always want to make sure that then the question comes in, is your password manager secure? Right? Because obviously, if you're going to put all your passwords into one place, you want to make sure that thing is secure. And if your password manager, everybody is to write it on a piece of paper and stick it in your drawer. Little word of advice, that is not secure. So don't go
down
there.
Works for my mom, John.
Yes, well, I have nothing to say to that. Because I will never say anything about your mother, Dan. But on that note, I thought that was interesting because a lot of us out there, what we do and what our passions are, sometimes they overlap with our jobs and sometimes they don't. And I'm kind of curious, with the job that you do as working as a front-end developer for Keeper Security, how do you balance your work with the things that you have to do during the day, I assume, and then also with learning something new or managing the book club that you manage?
So I'd say there's a bunch of overlap because pretty much everything I do at nights and weekends is focused on, like right now, learning more JavaScript. And then during the day, I get to apply that new knowledge all day. And so it kind of just feels like, you know, what I do at night is just helping me in my day job even more. And I'm just so passionate about helping other people get into coding and JavaScript development. And then that's what I get to do all day as well. So I guess it feels pretty effortless.
So Madison, when you're learning to code, like put yourself back in the shoes that you were in when you were learning to do this for a moment. And if you could kind of give somebody advice who was going down this road, like I imagine were things that nothing went smoothly, or maybe not nothing, but some things probably didn't go smoothly. And maybe you have some advice to yourself, or I wish I had done this. What would you kind of lend to people out there? Now let's take a quick break from a word from our sponsors.
So John, one of the things I like about AG Grid, which is a data grid component for the kind of complex grid scenarios that we encounter all the time in enterprise apps. One of the things I really like about it is that it works for a variety of frameworks, Angular, React, Vue, or just vanilla JS. Does that ring a bell for you?
Oh, it really does. There's all these different companies that I work with where they have no choice but to use a lot of these different tools because they have different teams working on them. So being able to port their code or share that code and that technical investment they have is really important to them.
Yeah, well, it's important to us. Ideally, we're a consulting company, and you know, we never know what our client's going to want to use, Angular, React, or Vue, but they're all going to need a grid, and it's great to be able to reach for the one grid that works everywhere, AG Grid.
You know, at any size company, too, because you could have these teams that maybe they only use one framework, but eventually they're going to switch to another one and be able to take that investment again and use it, reuse it, is really nice.
So if a multi-framework data grid makes sense to you, please go check out AG Grid at ag-grid.com.
And we're back.
I'd say my biggest tip is to figure out what it is about coding that you're curious about and follow that curiosity. And, you know, that might sound kind of trite or obvious, but I don't think we've been taught to really notice when we're curious about something and to kind of follow that. And I think that makes sense if you think about, for most of us, like when you were in school, you take 5 different classes or college in 5 different subjects, and you have to divide your time between all of these things. And, you know, imagine if you said, like, I just want to pause this one part of the curriculum and focus on learning this one thing for 3 months. You're not really allowed to do that. And so I don't think we're really taught to, like, notice when we're curious about something and just follow that impulse. But when it comes to learning outside of school, you'll learn the most, you know, when you are truly curious about something. And so my advice is to just figure out what it is about coding that is really exciting to you and study that. And there's this Richard Feynman quote that I love. And he says, study hard what interests you in the most undisciplined, irreverent, and original manner possible.
That's actually really cool. I'm going to try to grab that quote here too and put a link to in the show notes for folks. But something it always gets me curious about people is, and I get this question a lot, and I wonder if you do as well, how many hours a week do you work? Like, how much time does it go into this? And should people be, do you feel like you should or other people should be spending their outside work time working on technology and coding or have other interests? Or kind of how do you balance your life with all this?
That's a great question, because I feel like that is such a contentious debate on tech Twitter, right? So if someone says they're working a lot on weekends, and someone will arrive to roast that person. And I completely agree, right? Like, working a ton on weekends and burnout and all these things, they're not healthy. And I would never tell someone that, you know, you have to kill yourself. But for me personally, I work during the day, and I just love coding, and I love like creating little side projects on the weekends. And so, like, if you want to code on the weekends because you genuinely love it, then do it. And that's kind of just, you know, my take on that. If I come to a point where I feel burnt out or tired, or if I have kids later in life, right, then I hope I like take breaks and relax and realize that keeping up with the latest technology isn't everything. But I'm not at that point yet. You know, I love to code on the weekends sometimes.
I think that's really good advice. I mean, I think it's a very personal decision for everybody, you know, so I would never presume to say you should always do this or never do that.
Yes.
Dan knows I often say I'm not a big fan of the words always and never in general, just because it really, is there really anything that's always or never in what we do? I think people have to decide, you know, what do you want to do? Do you want to put more time into technology? If that's what you want to do is fun, by all means, have fun doing it. I guess where I do fall in a line more of, I don't recommend this, is if you feel like to keep up at your job, you have to put in double the amount of time to do what you're doing. I think that's where somebody's spending 80 hours a week just doing their job, and it's not fun anymore. Like, if you get to that point, yeah, I think that's a good place to step back and maybe not stop. Maybe that's really what you want to do, but to at least look at it and go, is this really where I want to be doing this at this time? And sometimes we have no choice because our jobs do dictate extra hours at times, but it's good to think about that.
Absolutely. And I've had in the past just known people who, you know, had to work 80 hours a week and they got very burnt out and kind of lost their love of coding. And so that's, you know, definitely not good.
Yeah, there's times where it's a sprint and times where it's a marathon. And I've had times where I just want to walk away for a week or two and literally just close my laptop. And I've done this. I close the laptop, not do any coding. And it's funny because what I do during that time is often different. Okay. But like, I'll bring my iPad and not to do email or other things, but because I like to draw. And it's just something I enjoy doing. But I find that during non-vacation times, I don't do it because when I draw, I tend to immerse myself in it for hours. And I don't have that kind of time normally during the week. So it's just kind of like when I'm away, I like to just sit down and do something like that or to read. I used to play guitar more. I've got a guitar hanging on my wall, which I barely touch now. But so for me, it rotates on what I like to do off hours. But I find it helps me recharge because work can be draining. I mean, work is work. It's not playtime for me. So get stuff done time. But I think everybody's different, you know?
Definitely.
So Madison, you give some great advice on how people can get started into this and what your journey has been like. We'd like to end our show with final thoughts for our audience. And this could be anything on topic or something maybe that has just really piqued your interest in the last, in the recent times here. So with our final thoughts, I guess I'll start the table with Dan. What's your final thoughts for the audience, Dan?
Yeah, you know, I had a different final thought, but since the topic of burnout came up, so I've definitely hit that multiple times in my career. And so if anybody is hitting that, everybody's different, as we talked about. I don't think there's one solution for all. But one thing that really, really helps me is just to make sure, and it's getting a little better now, I think, for folks with everything going on in 2020, is just to get out, like outside. Step away from the computer, you know, step away from the phone. And even if it's just going in city. Now, I generally go and walk or run just about every day, one of those two. And it's amazing the days that I don't, how, I don't know, this, your whole perspective changes. So I guess my focus there would be, if you are going through that burnout phase, for me, it wasn't necessarily that it was always the technology I was sick of or something. It was just, I just needed a break, you know? So take a break, I guess would be my thing. Get outside. It does wonders for you.
Good tips, Dan. And Madison, what's your final thought for our audience?
Definitely. Yeah. Well, I could just expand upon that. I think that is like absolutely so true. And I think that turning off your notifications can help you get that break. And I think this kind of plays into teaching yourself to code. I think half the battle of learning how to code or learning a new skill is just like, you know, turning off your notifications and actually focusing and as well as, you know, taking breaks and things like that. I think that's a thing a lot of people message me about and say, like, I just can't focus. And I think that it makes sense. So learning how to focus and do that deep work, but then also taking breaks, I think is really important.
I think those are great tips. And I've even heard people say to when you go on vacation or when you take breaks, sometimes like even on weekends, removing Slack, Teams or Outlook or whatever you're using from your phone, just like delete the app and then put it back on Monday, for example. So you can't be, you know, you get all those notifications and pop-ups. It can be very, very difficult to ignore them when your phone's going crazy and you're walking around somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. I literally have no notifications. I have turned off everything. I have to go check Outlook or check Teams or whatever.
I love that. I did that recently, turned off all my notifications and tried to just create times when I would, you know, check my phone. I think it helps.
I think it does. And there's nothing wrong with it. Like, I remember when I first started doing some of those things, I felt guilty about disconnecting, but then I realized that it's actually good for everybody. Like nobody, the world will continue if I don't check my email for a few moments. Maybe at first I didn't think that would happen, but you know, it does come there. But my general tip on our final thought for people today is actually about learning. And we all learn differently. I think we all have pretty well-formed opinions out there in this industry about how people should learn. And it can be intimidating at times. Sometimes people say, if you don't watch Front End Masters or Pluralsight or Egghead or LinkedIn Learning or you fill in the blank, or you don't go to some other place to learn, you're not doing it right. Like that's the best place to go. And I think the problem with those statements is we all might have a different way of learning. For me, I'm a visual learner and a hands-on learner. So watching videos doesn't always do it for me, but it does do it for other people. I tend to draw when I learn. So I actually write sketch notes and it helps me absorb the material. So what I'll do is I'll read or watch or do something, but I'll actually following your advice, Madison, I'll open up the code and just start doing something. New feature in a tool, how does it work? React hooks, for example. When I first started looking at it, I'm like, I'm not getting this. Like, you know, and the words confuse me at times. I'll read an explanation about React hooks, and it's like something like this. A React hook is a hook that's used in React that helps you react to hooks. And you're like, that's what it sounds like to me when I read it. And I'm like, my mind's exploding. So I have to open up the code, go look at examples, try it out, see how this thing works. And for me, that works. That may not work for everybody. So my final thought for you all is be comfortable with the way you learn. Whatever it is that helps you, reading, doing, watching videos, whatever it is, Be comfortable with what that is and just own it. Don't worry about what people like me tell you to go learn. It's really about what you want to do and how you want to do it.
I think that's a great point because I get asked like every other day, like, hey, what do you think is the best coding resource? And I feel like there are more helpful questions than that to ask because, you know, what's helpful to me as a resource might not resonate with the other person, right? And there are there's so much amazing content out there. You can find something that works for you, but it might not be the same for me. So I think there are different, more important questions like, you know, what are you really excited about or what do you want to build?
That's a great point. And I think if you could just repeat that for everybody, because I think that's something really people should drive home.
Right. Yeah. So I get questions every other day from people who are learning how to code and they say, like, what's the best coding resource? And I'm sure you both have been asked this a lot, right? It's a common question. People say, what's the best resource? And I'm not sure how helpful that question is for a beginner because the best resource to me might not work for your learning style, right? And so I just think that there are other questions that might be more helpful that you could ask yourself, like, what are you genuinely excited about when it comes to coding? And what do you want to build?
That's awesome. That's awesome. Thank you so much. And hey, Madison, thank you for coming on the show today. And hopefully we can get you back on in the future if you're open to it.
I would love that. This was so awesome. Thank you.
And I want to invite all you listeners out there to check out the show notes and check out the Code Book Club to figure out if you want to join this or maybe be a host or see if this is something of interest to you. Madison, you've been running that now for a bit. And you said it's a growing community. So I hope you don't mind some few more people checking it out.
I would love that. Thank you.
Awesome. And Dan, thanks for being on the show again. And thank you all to all of our sponsors and to all of our listeners out there. These episodes have been sponsored by Narwhal and AG Grid and also Raygun. And we can't let out Ward Bell's Idea Blade company as well, one of our fellow co-hosts. So thank you all for listening to the show again. And you'll hear from us every Thursday morning. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk JavaScript. This show and all of our shows are available at www.realtalkjs.com with links and notes. John and Ward would love to hear what you think, especially about potential guests and topics for future shows. Follow and send them a message on Twitter at Real Talk JS.